This speedcast is brought to you by AF1 Racing of Austin, Texas. The best Italian motorcycles and scooters. AF1RacingAustin.com.
All right, this is Les Kaiser. Welcome back to Speed City. And it's always great when it's race week in Austin at the Circuit Americas. Here we are with Shay Holbrook getting caught up again. Welcome back to Speed City.
Hey, thanks, Les. It's been some time. It's been 2 years since the Houston Grand Prix, I guess, right?
It has. It's been great. And we're seeing you all over the place, certainly on the web. But I saw you on TV the other night, and I was like, hey, she's coming. I got to talk to her. So get us caught up. What's the 2 years been like for you?
There's been a lot happening in the past 2 years. Shay Racing as a team entity has grown tremendously. We've got some new drivers on board, and I'm happy to announce we've done some really cool things outside of road racing. The 2015 season, I will be competing in a full season series in the IHRA Nitro Jam Drag Racing Series in a jet car. So a little different than what I'm used to. I've had one race, actually won one of them, and it's been interesting.
That is fantastic. I did see that and thought that was great. You know, we've got a few of the ladies hitting the drag strip nowadays, and I am loving it. You know, you just met my daughter, and it's you know, we love seeing the ladies get out there and whoop up on the guys. So get us caught up to what's going on more recently.
So actually within the past few weeks, just prior to the race here in Austin, I put together a small budget to do some races in Pirelli World Challenge. So thanks to many of our sponsors, I was able to put back our TCA entry in the car. So it all the credit really falls to them. So Hendrick Honda, who gave us the Civic, True Car, Bubba Burgers, and Radium has been a huge supporter of us. And the whole reason, like, I mean, literally, it came down to the 11th hour. You know how things are. You know, we're in the race shop. The money starts to come in. We get the green light, go ahead. Now the car's got to go to RAF. Now the car needs to be fixed from the last season because the car sat. So we had quite a bit to do in preparation at COTA.
And, you know, we've been seeing these changes. Like I said, saw you on TV the other night for True Car. You know, that's a great sponsor, great service. Definitely have to check that out if you're out shopping for cars. But tell us about this season, where you're going. What are your expectations for this season?
Oh, my gosh. My expectations have changed a lot, like, versus last year. Because last year, we were contenders for the championship. We finished second place in the TCA class with every shot. I mean, it was literally up until the last race of the weekend, of the season, rather, it was a toss-up on who was going to win. So I'm not running a full season, so with not running a full season, I can't really have expectations of going and winning a championship. But at the same time, you know, if you're here to play, you're here to win. You know, we did not have a very good qualifying session. And I'll have to take credit for it not being a very good qualifying session. We'll be starting from the back. But at the same time, you know, I love a chase. I'm always really good at chasing cars. So if anything, we just get to pass six cars by turn one, right?
There you go. Yeah. And that can certainly happen here. You know, that's one of the things we've seen with the width of this track. Though it certainly gets tight through turn one, but we see a lot more vehicles side by side on this than we do on several other tracks. So I think it's probably realistic that if not by turn one, you can manage it through some of the rest of the track.
Well, I don't know if that will happen during turn one. That's wishful thinking, but I think I'll pick them off one by one. But it's finally we're getting some good weather here. It's been absolutely Antarctica, for a lack of better words. It's played a lot with our Pirelli tires. It's difficult to go out there on slicks with zero heat, and it's, you know, you don't build heat until five laps. But it'll be a good weekend for us, and like I said, a lot's been going on. I'm also going to be participating in something called Elk Charity Challenge in May, and I know that you guys are going to be having Matt from there on, so I'll let him speak a little bit more about it, but it's something to check out, worthwhile, and it's going to be a good weekend for us, so we'll see.
Hey, well, always, you know, great to see you. Best of luck. We'll be watching you. Describe your car for the audience.
Oh, it's a white and blue Honda Civic Si with pink mirrors. Can't miss it.
All righty, and the number?
67.
There we go. Be sure and follow Shay. It's going to be a great weekend. Friday looks awesome here. The sun has come out. Things are warmed up. We're shedding our jackets and hoping this weather's not going to change too much through the weekend. Welcome back to Speed City. This is Les Kaiser. We're out with the Pirelli World Challenge today at the Circuit of Americas. One of the things that everybody looks at are all of the brands. There's 23 brands represented this weekend. And drivers from around the world, we've got so many men and women alike. We just saw Christina Nielsen coming in. She is traveling and working with TRG Aston Martin, doing a great job. But it's not all foreigners. We've got some folks from around here, you might say. Will Hardiman is driving the Wholesale Parts Direct Porsche with us this weekend. And so we've caught up with Will, and we're going to get it to introduce you to Will as we go on. It's not just about the foreigners. Here's a Texas boy himself. Will, welcome to Speed City.
Hey, how's it going, Les? So you mentioned I'm a local guy, and apparently I'm starting to understand that that's just as rare as around here as the foreigners, you know, because it's rare to be born and raised in Austin like me. And where were you born and raised?
I was born in South Texas and moved here as a kid, and I've been here ever since. Solid 100% Texan.
That's right. But, you know, I'm out here mainly just having fun. That's my goal. And if I win, then I win. Right now I'm sitting on P1 for our first race this afternoon. So,
congrats. That is a big thing. So, fastest one on the lap. We saw you running yesterday. You looked great out there. Car looked very settled. And I know that was orchestrated by More Speed, one of our other local shops that does a lot of race prep and street prep. So give us an idea of what your pack was like yesterday on the track.
It's kind of a mixed bag. There's four classes running in my race, and I'm in the top class called the Diamond Class with the latest 991 Porsche 911, which is 2014 and newer. And so me and about half a dozen other guys running in a pack of 20 total, we're running in the newer 991. So those are my competition out there. So it's really a race within a race. And those are the guys I have to watch out for, but I'm not worried. None of these guys are all pretty conservative, and they're a good bit slower than me during qualifying and practice. So my plan is just to get out front and just run away from them.
You were out there quite a bit. You were out nearly a second. You turned a 2:12.093 for your best lap. The next closest we have is Oscar Arroyo in a 2:13.056. So you've got just about a second of time to relax there. That is fantastic to see that. You also did it early in the session in the third lap. And I have to say, that's about the time things usually come up to temperature on these. But that's great that you had it that early and it maintained. So your lap times throughout the course lasted well. Let's give some folks an idea about how a local guy wound up driving. And here you are, pole position in the GT3 Cup.
Well, basically, I am a living tribute to the guy who can... I had never driven a race car as of 9 months ago. And I'm a living tribute to any guys out there that want to get into racing. You do it right, you go to the racing schools. I went to Bondurant a number of times, as well as got into test days with my own race car. And the guys at More Speed, David Moore and Price Cobb, man, those guys are such great mentors. I mean, they make all the difference, and we were doing all the right stuff. And you know what? I felt like I was over my head most of the time and kept on landing on my feet, and we kept on stretching just a little bit, 10%, 5% out of my comfort zone each time I was out working on different stuff. And now we're sitting here today, and I'm feeling really good and really comfortable and on top of my game today. So 9 months later.
9 months. That's fantastic. Well, you certainly have some great mentors in David Moore and Price Cobb there. You know, the Price Cobb name you've certainly heard. We also interviewed David Moore back a few weeks ago. Check out More Speed at morespeed.com. And then, one of the things that people just don't get is, oh, wow, so 9 months you did this. Well, I don't care how humble you are. That is rare to be able to come in with that kind of talent. What kind of experience did you have beforehand? Motorcycle, carts? What were you involved in?
I drive a shifter cart very casually for the last number of years, and just playing around with friends. I have some motocross, amateur, very beginner level experience, but nonetheless some minor racing. And I've just always been around cars. My family's in the car business in Austin. I've always been interested in it. This has been a lifelong dream since I was 14 years old. So I've always had the mentality and the eye for this type of stuff. And then once we were ready to go do it, we just opened the floodgates.
Well, you've done so in amazing grace, I'll tell you that, and success. So give us an idea of what the rest of your weekend's going to look like here. You're on pole position. Are there any shifts and changes that you're making for this weekend?
The only thing that we're focusing on right now is I'm going to start off in P1 and protect my position through turn one, and then I have such a great advantage through the rest of the turn two through 12 that I'm just going to run away from everyone. That's pretty much the inevitability. And then I'm probably going to catch traffic in the last half of the race and then negotiate that and do the best I can. But I'm really out here to have fun and just stay relaxed, and that's when I really race the best.
Fantastic. You know, that's one of the things we've heard, whether it's motorcycles or cars, get out there, have fun, get relaxed. And when you relax, you start thinking better. It's when you're on edge and the pressure's on that you make those mistakes. And the idea is stay relaxed and apply the pressure to somebody else, don't you think?
That's right. That's right, Les. I mean, you cannot do well in this sport unless you are relaxed and your mind is in the right place. If you're in over your head, you're scared, or you're you know, letting other people control you on the track, that's not a good place to be, and you will not run up front.
Now, I know you're setting out on a pretty strong season this year, and on the plan is Sebring. So tell us what you're looking towards for Sebring.
Well, that's when I step up into the IMSA GT3 Cup Series, and it's going to be more challenging and probably more my speed for me to go, you know, try to give those guys up front, the top, you know, P1 through 3, a really hard, give them a good run for the money. So that's my plan, and once again, to have fun out there and do the best I can for this season in IMSA.
You know, you have set up right. You've taken logical, rational approach, even for only being on the four wheels for 9 months. You've done great. You definitely got a great team behind you with Wholesale Parts Direct and also More Speed, both great Austin-based companies, and encourage you to check those out. I was actually in San Antonio and needed a car part for somebody and went by Wholesale Parts Direct. Met Crystal there. She had no idea who I was. Got phenomenal service, and she actually spent enough time to figure out which version of a part that I needed, and we didn't have the part there, but we were able to get through it. So, folks, be sure and patronize, you know, these people. Wholesale Parts Direct is a great, you know, Texas-based business. More Speed will take care of your daily cars, routine maintenance on these higher-end cars, or if you want to come to the track, Price and David will definitely coach you into getting set up on the track, just as they have Will here. So with that, Will, best of luck from Speed City. We're looking forward, and we are excited to see you continue through the season.
Thank you, Les. Really appreciate it. Good to meet you.
Okay, Speed City fans, I'm delighted to welcome one of the legends of motorsport that has been pretty much to every circuit in the world, but for the first time coming to the Circuit of the Americas, Derek Bell. Welcome to Speed City and welcome to Austin.
Thank you very much. No, it's wonderful to be here. It could do with a couple of degrees warmer, but, you know, I can't complain.
I will certainly try to arrange that. Your next trip, just let us know when.
Thank you.
As a driver, you went out in the Bentley, obviously. What were your thoughts on as a modern track? Because obviously a lot of the modern tracks have been criticised over the years, and of course you've driven all the great ones.
I can quite see why the Grand Prix drivers loved it when they came here, and I don't think they were making fuss. I was here for the Grand Prix, but I never saw the track apart from Turn 1. And I did enjoy that weekend, and everybody seemed to enjoy it very much. But I have to say, having got out there today, not knowing where I was going, I hadn't even, you know, been on a computer to sort of look at it from anything any other way. And I got out there, and I have to say, I love the flow of it. I thought it had a tremendous flow all the way round. The only bad bit was having to come in the pit lane. But apart from that, you know, I thought every corner was very nice, very well thought out. There wasn't sort of you had to keep backing off in one corner and backing off in the other. You could actually let it flow with a little bit of a lift if you needed to. I thought it was great, and I can quite see why all the Grand Prix drivers are all over it. And, of course, I think it's a good distance. I don't know what it is, but it's quite a long lap, isn't it?
Yeah, 3.14.
Well, there you are. I mean, it's one of the longer laps, and I think it's real worthy of all the accolades it's had.
It really is. Well, I got to ask. Is it bad that you came into the pit lane because you were getting off the track, or was there some design element there?
There was the fact was we only did one lap at a time.
okay, I will totally agree.
Because we only had like 40 minutes to do, I think, about 18 people, rides for 18 people. And, you know, it was just one lap on and straight back in. So,
you know what amazes me about all of these drivers that we've seen over the years? And my Uncle Brian is exactly the same. He's always hooning around some weekend somewhere in a 917. You're going to Goodwood. You guys don't give in, do you? You just keep on driving. I love
it. I mean, believe me, I said to somebody at lunchtime, I said, they said, you know, how often do you drive? I said, I'll be out there today if they ask me. I mean, I haven't got my helmet, but I'd be out there and I know I could do 50 minutes and do quite a good job. And you can't fail when you've been in racing so long. It's the most natural thing, unless you got hurt or for some reason you just got sick of it. But I never got sick of it. I had the most phenomenal career and privileged life that I had through it all, racing for everybody that existed, really, and even from Formula One onwards. And, you know, I'm here today to talk about it and still want to get in a race car and have a go. And when, as long as you get tracks like this, you can go and have fun on, and you can still go back to Spa, still go back to the Nürburgring, the great historic tracks, then life's wonderful, isn't it?
It really is. So I wanted to ask, you're a great person to finally ask this question. Every track has its personality. You know, COTA certainly has a personality, but can you relate it to one of the historic tracks so that as a driver that you kind of get this sense of returning to another track?
If anything, it has to be a bit like Spa. Now, only because we still race there, and it still exists. There's probably other tracks in the world, but that track, I mean, it's got some elevation. This has some elevation. It has some one bend after another. You know, one curve leads into another, and obviously some high speed stuff, some moderate speed stuff, a bit of a hairpin stuck in the middle of it, just to sort of slow you right down. I think it's very comparable with a Spa in a way. I mean, Spa would hate me for saying that, but you've got to look at the length of the track, and there aren't many tracks more than 3 miles round. And I think with this one having 3 miles puts it up there with those few excellent tracks that are.
Sure, 3.4 miles. It's just one of those things that it is long. You know, I heard there were discussion about making it shorter in the course of it, but, you know, with the Formula One, one of the things that was brought up is they wanted to approach, you know, something in the close to 2 minutes, and they felt like this would do it in this type of design. Do you think that's a good play to go with this length? Are you thinking tracks are going to extend longer as new tracks are built, or will they stay around here? What would
I don't think tracks will get any longer. I don't think there's any reason to, but I always think 3 miles is quite good, and I guess it's because I grew up in Europe, you know, and Goodwood's 2.45 miles, Silverstone's 2.7, Snetterton was 2.8 or something years ago. Brands Hatch was up near the 3 miles. But those are tracks I was weaned on. So logically, then you go to Spa and you're up to, you know, 8 miles and you're back down to 5 now. And Nürburgring, of course, is in another world.
It is.
That is a different sort of track. But no, I think this is a perfect length. What I loved about it, you can actually get into a rhythm on this track. You've got time to get a rhythm, and I don't mean every corner right, I mean the fact that you haven't got the corner, not that damn turn three again, and there's only 7 corners. You know, you're going around, you're going, and you come towards the end of the lap, and you know you're coming out that last left-hander, and of course we came in the pits then, but you just know the build-up, and there's enough corners to keep it interesting. Because, I mean, you don't want to just go through 7 corners every lap you go around. You see it on some tracks, and you go, that must be awful. But to hit from here, and circuits like this, you're getting a great variety, and that makes it more fun. And we want to enjoy our driving, you know.
Derek, as somebody who's had the success you've had in sports car racing and obviously raced here in America, living here now in America, what are your thoughts on the new Tudor and the new WEC series? Because I feel like there's a new renaissance, and you know this as being part of the sport, but it goes through, you know, ebbs and troughs where sometimes sports car racing is right up there and other times it's kind of lost its way a little bit. But the new impetus is that I would say that especially coming here as well in September on a double header, it's starting to really get back to those Le Mans days of really glory days.
It's taken time to straighten itself out with all the different owners that there were, but I think, you know, having the family that run it right now, I mean, they know how to go racing. I wasn't very happy with it in the beginning. I didn't think the cars were very attractive. I didn't think they sounded right. It wasn't right, but it got the ball rolling. And I think now, you know, we're seeing it come to fruition, and that more people are going into it. And the rules are more sort of organized for everybody. They can get out there and enjoy their racing. I would still like to see it matched up with Le Mans and be able to go to Spa. It was wonderful in those 80s, which I mustn't keep harping on. But, you know, Bob Dyson, Bob Aiken and all these guys, we got to go to Europe. And they'll take in Spa and take in Le Mans and do the Nürburgring, because you have to do those great tracks. You have to do Daytona. You have to do Sebring. And other tracks in America, Elkhart Lake, Watkins Glen, wonderful circuits. And, of course, here now. And those tracks, that's a series in itself. The ones I've just mentioned will make it an incredible world series. I hope it gets back to that one day. I'm not sure that we should go diving off at
with massive, financial injections of money into developing hybrids and electric cars and all that. I know it's all great for the environment, but, I remember somebody saying years ago, they said, we're worried about how much Formula One costs, but do you realize that the amount of fuel that they use in a year is the same as a jumbo flying to New York?
That
pretty much sums it up.
That's quite a revelation there.
Yeah.
Some of the things that I always feel like, it is the technology that's changing, and a lot of it is coming to the street. Do you perceive, what's your appraisal of technology and the influence on drivers? Now, and I'll preface that a little bit, we've heard people say with all this technology, we don't have to have as strong of a driver with this technology aiding in traction control and mapping and things like that. What are your thoughts on that?
What do you mean by a stronger driver? You mean mentally and physically?
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think it has changed. I mean, you think, again, going back to the Brian Redman days and Ariel Andretti days and all these guys, I mean, we didn't have power steering. We didn't have ABS when we braked, so it was the amount of pressure we put on the brake pedal as our legs got more tired and more tired and the brake pedal got longer and longer. And the no power steering, you turn these damn cars into the corner and your shoulders would ache. Your shoulder, would burn your shoulder muscles. I remember coming off the little bit of banking at Charlotte when we did the sports car race there on the infield as well. I mean, literally, you had to sum up energy and just hold that wheel, and it burnt right up into your neck, holding the car as you came off turn four. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. And, I think things have changed a lot. It does make it easier for the younger drivers coming in. I mean, you look at them, they're certainly much skinnier than I am, and they're not as robust as we were in those days, and because you can get away with it. In that era that we were in, you had to be so strong. I mean, I tried to get in my old Formula One cars, and I have a job to get my shoulders in, because by driving sports cars, my shoulders developed. Seriously. And so I'm sure all these electronic devices are great, but there's still nothing like grassroots, raw driving. And what do we all do when we get out there today? Switch everything off.
Yeah, we do. We had a great discussion with Mark Weber about it, and he said, the mics were turned off, but what he said, he goes, I love getting back in a sports car. This is where I started. This is what I wanted.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Well, I can see that. And but Mark is a brilliant driver, but he's so lucky that, of course, he's gone to Porsche, because they are the most magnificent team to work for, and I had many wonderful, glorious years with them, and I admire him for doing that. I'm still not 1,000% sure that all the hybrid stuff is what I think we should be developing it, but I think you still want the drivers to enjoy their racing, and I'm not so sure that they really enjoy driving the thing when they're halfway around a lap and the light comes on and takes fuel pressure away because they're using too much gas.
Finally, I got one more for you, because I know that it's got to be special. You're one of the few men in the world that's raced with his own son. Mm. Justin, of course, has got a now burgeoning career in TV, and I hate him for it because he keeps taking jobs that I'd like. No, he's doing a fantastic job at Le Mans, and he's a superb commentator, but a great driver too, and it must have been fun to go and do Le Mans.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I did it twice with him. I did it in 1962 with Tiffany Dell, and then the next time I did it, was with him in the McLaren. And I'd retired in 1994. That was going to be my last year. And he phoned me up and said, "Come on, Dad, you've got to come and do Le Mans with us." And I went, "What the hell?" I said, "Justin, I'm not even ready for it. I was racing, but I wasn't prepared for Le Mans." And you had to have a certain mental attitude before you went to Le Mans, building up with your fitness. So he went to Le Mans, and I mean, I have to say, I was staggered, because there's no way we thought the car would last after dinner. So I thought, well, that's all right. Actually, we're back at the hotel. We won't lose any sleep. And lo and behold, it peddles with rain from 7 o'clock till like 11 o'clock the next morning. And we and the other car, the other McLaren, which ultimately run the race with JJ Leto and people in, we were on the same lap as that car for the next 16 hours, and they never took the lead off us. We were ahead of them the whole time. And then sadly, just towards the end, as it dried out, the clutch release bearing that we knew was the weak link, and we didn't have the modification, which basically cost, I think, £100,000 to buy, to put on the car. And all the private teams said, to hell with that. We spent $1 million buying the thing, not spending another £100. And so we opted to go without it and have an early dinner. But as it happened, we carried on. And, of course, we did finish third. And so, but to finish on Father's Day and be on winner's rostrum with your son and, of course, the brilliant Andy Wallace was fantastic. It was great.
Just wanted to get that story out because I know you're going to go and see that car, I think, at Goodwood, right?
Yeah, I'm driving it at Goodwood, yes, in a couple of weeks. Yeah.
Well, listen, thanks for talking to us. Great to see you again. And you. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
I will. Lovely to see you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Okay, Speed City fans, I'm delighted to welcome to Speed City John DeVio, who is the marketing and motorsport manager for Bentley here in the USA. And it's delightful to see Bentley back to racing. I've been watching them in the last few years. And of course, you only have to look back at your history, and you should, because Bentley won Le Mans five times in the 20s. And actually did it in the modern era too, in 2003, I think. So they have an amazing history in sports car racing. But actually, in the last few years, have just started really making an impact. And here in the USA, John, you tell me if I'm wrong, but are just starting to really make their mark here. And I think this championship is setting you guys up to be a major player here in the US as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming into the World Challenge 2014, we came in halfway through the season and ultimately used it as a kind of a proving ground, really. We had a great format and a template to work from in the Blancpain series in Europe, which was endurance racing. Coming to the World Challenge, where you're focused on sprint racing, quite a different dynamic. So we were able to ultimately test how the car ran, learn how to get it, you know, heated up quicker, and ultimately apply some of that information, not only here in the States, but triangulate and ultimately improve the car as well for the European team. So it's been a learning curve. Certainly here in the U.S., but our partners at Dyson Racing have been fantastic. And we're coming in 2015 with a arsenal of information, elements that we can apply, and hopefully vying for a championship this year is the goal for Bentley on the manufacturer side.
I mentioned the mark being such an important mark in the history of motorsport, but that is just that, a history. Why do Bentley in the modern era feel like they need to go racing? Because Bentley is such a high-end product, it doesn't need to go racing. The people who want a Bentley will come to you anyway. So to take on Aston Martin, to take on Nissan and all the other manufacturers that are here this weekend, you know, it's quite an undertaking and an expensive one at that. What is the ethos behind what you're doing?
Well, I think what people tend to forget about Bentley, as you said, is the history of the brand. I mean, quite frankly, W.O. Bentley in 1919, as we were developing, or as he was developing, you know, his brand, what was really a chance encounter at Le Mans in 1923 ultimately determined him to make a decision to attend in 1924 to actually race. And that's really how the company took off, was developing cars based on the racing program. And it's a component to the business that we like to discuss and talk about. However, in recent years, we haven't necessarily applied that. So coming into the GT3 program, bringing Bentley Motorsport back into the modern era is both a marketing campaign, but also a testament to our past and in redeveloping, you know, what we're all passionate about, which is racing, and taking that information and kind of really applying, I guess, both the brand element of Bentley and then the engineering component. So it's one thing to talk about how fantastic your cars are. It's another thing to actually go out on the race circuit and really put it through the ringer and put it up against competitors such as Porsche, McLaren, Audi, Lamborghini. I mean, these are all direct competitors, and not only on the track but in the marketplace in general. So this is one of those fundamental programs where we can really showcase the capabilities of our products, and it's you know, it's fun. Yeah, quite frankly, there's the people that work in Bentley are truly passionate about what they do, and we're really able to display that passion and showcase that here on the race circuits.
You know, one of the things that I think plays into this is a lot of folks don't really think of Bentley as performance. We see the movie stars, we see, you know, famous folks with them, but by all means, this is a high-performance vehicle, and yes, it's larger and has a great, you know, profile and view of it, but you know, it doesn't fall on deaf ears when I hear one of the Bentley W engines running.
Yeah, it is a big, you know, brooding V8, and it's got a nice throaty exhaust note. And again, part of that marketing campaign with Motorsport and coming back is actually showcasing, as I said, you know, the performance side of the business. When people hear Bentley, they don't necessarily think youthful, performance-based manufacturer. But in theory, we really are. And that's ultimately what we're here to do, is to kind of put that tangibility to what we say and put the car on the racetrack and showcase what we can actually do, both on and off-road.
Well, I know you're debuting one, the first that I've seen anyway, is the GT3R this weekend. Can you give us a little insight to that?
GT3R was developed in conjunction with the Bentley Motorsport team in Crewe, England. It is the most powerful, fastest Bentley production car to date. Again, visually, we take a lot of the components that we apply to the GT3 and showcase them in the GT3R, with the white, obviously, body paint, the livery that goes on the car, but the interior is very impressive. Remove the rear seats. It's the only two-seater car that we have in the lineup at the moment. Massive amounts of horsepower. We're looking at about 572 brake horsepower in this vehicle, on an all-wheel drive car. It truly is a beast, and quite frankly, a very capable one at that. So we were showcasing it here for the first time at Circuit of the Americas for the Pirelli World Challenge. There are only 99 of these cars being brought to the United States. 300 are only being built globally. So to be able to give that experience to the customers in the Austin area, it truly is a privilege, I'd say, for them to be able to experience such a unique and limited edition product.
What's also impressed me with what you're doing is, you expect Bentley to be racing in Europe. Obviously, that's where the origins are. North America is such a big market, so of course, again. But I do the GT Asia Championship in Asia and go to Macau, and Bentley came into Shanghai at the end of last season and blitzed it, and we're at Macau, and, very much part of that. So I've been impressed with the sort of global. Can you tell us more about the group and the sort of strategy of the motoring group that you're part of? Because obviously, clearly, this is not just a racing thing for the America, this is a global initiative.
Absolutely. It certainly is. I mean, everything kind of runs out of the central hub and crew at the Bentley factory, but we work with our technical partners at M Sport as well. And at the moment, we have, I believe, around four or five teams that we're operating within. We have the full work supported team, which is Bentley Team M Sport, which runs in the Blancpain series, but now we have our work-supported partners, inclusive of Dyson Racing here in the United States, Absolute Racing, for instance, GT Asia, and just recently, HTP Motorsports will be running in Europe as well. The current program is running on the work-supported basis, so everyone is kind of triangulating information to develop the car, as well as get our teams up to speed. But ultimately, the goal further down the road, we will look to develop customer programs and then potentially even look at business opportunities into one make series if and when that becomes applicable. We certainly want to make it a sustainable business model, and it won't be a 1 to 2 year program. That's not what we're looking to do. We'd really like to make this something that that stays and has some has some legacy within the Bentley brand. But starting with our works teams is kind of priority number one, and then ultimately look to expand that into the gentleman racer racer element.
Must be pretty special going to Le Mans now in the modern day with that history. And I'm sure just the fans of Le Mans must love going to the Bentley pit because of that history.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we still do customer programs at Le Mans, I think, purely for the legacy aspect of it. Le Mans itself has its own kind of aura and historic element around it, and when you're able to combine those two histories, the Bentley mark and then just the legacy of Le Mans itself, it makes for a really great environment and a really fun weekend. And in our guests that we bring in, while we may not be on the racetrack, unto itself, we're still there to support the lifestyle, which ultimately is the racing pedigree that the brand was founded on.
It is, the history all the way up to the modern times. Bentley has been through it all, has been part of racing lore in Europe, and so many Americans are not familiar with that. And so I really appreciate you taking time out, John, to get us caught up, help us share the love of Bentley and the W8s as they are now, and the product line. So any secrets about what's next for Bentley racing season?
Well, they don't call them secrets for nothing. We'll keep that one under wraps. But the focus this year again is learning more, working with our partners. And as I said, the guys at Dyson Racing are fantastic, and we have a great working relationship. But anything that we can do to develop the car further and ultimately develop the program and the marketing aspect of the program is fantastic.
All right, well, John DeVio, thank you so much for talking to us. Best of luck this weekend at the Circuit of the Americas. It's an absolute privilege to have a mark like Bentley as part of this scene. So we're delighted to have you here. You're welcome anytime. And thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much, guys. I really appreciate the time.
Well, Kevin Hurst, what a day here at the Circuit of the Americas. When you woke up this morning, did you have any idea that the conditions would be this bad?
Yeah, we knew there was a big chance of rain, but we didn't know how much and how the track is going to be. And after the warm up, I think we had quite a good view on how the race track is going to be, because there was I think 96% of rain or something. So we built the car for this, and obviously it was really, really good. We had a great car, so no, I think it's been a great day for us, and I hope there's going to be more raining race during the year.
The race, for me anyway, was won and lost effectively after that safety car. You got a good restart there and never looked back after that, but it's a double-edged sword because you were pushing quite hard.
Yeah, I got a good start, and then I thought, you know, in every race like this, especially on the rain, you got to pull the gap as fast as possible to let the other fight, and the spray also helping me a lot, as the visibility from the other get lower, so I pull a gap after the start, and then bummer because of the safety car, but I could at the restart I could pull the same gap in the same amount of laps, so our car was really, really consistent, super fast, so it was not really a problem. But for sure, mentally is not really great when you got a good lap and a good gap and you got the safety car out there.
I was going to say, you had a big lead, but there were some moments, and I want to talk about two of them. One was with about three laps to go, you came through the S's here and went completely sideways. That woke you up.
Yeah, obviously on the rain, you don't... I tried not to back up so much, because sometimes when you back up, you do mistakes and you're not as attentive as you were before. So I tried to push the whole way without taking any crazy risk. But it's true that in the S's, I got some sideways moments. It's going to be cool on video, I think.
And then on the last lap, that was the other part, which you were weaving through slower traffic, but having to literally go off track to stay on track. And obviously the clock was ticking down. What was your mindset then?
Yeah, I was really scared having a contact with these cars, because they were fighting, and when you're fighting, you don't really look at what's happening behind you and the blue flags, and the visibility was quite poor. So I was scared, and especially on the back straight, because I overtook an Aston Martin in the beginning of the back straight, and then I couldn't see in my mirror where he was on the braking, so I was really hoping that he would brake early enough not to hit me. So I did kind of a right-left to see where he was, and this was okay, and then I passed one car after that on the outside, I think from turn 12 or 13, which was a bit tricky because he didn't really let me pass, but it was really hard condition, and when you're fighting, as I said, you don't really look in the mirror. So.
Well, listen, congratulations to you, and congratulations to Flying Lizard. Hope you've got a great season ahead of you, and thanks for talking to us on Speed City.
Thank you.
All righty, back out on Park from A. We're just wrapping up. Austin Knight, Mark McKenzie. You had a rough race there. Not everything went your way this time.
No, we got bumped into a few times, and then somewhere along the line I lost valve stems, or got a puncture on both left sides. I felt it first on the left rear. It was really sketchy, but I was able to limp it in, and actually we lost both left tires. So we put on a fresh set of Pirelli reins on the left side, went back out, and then went pretty quick. So we had lost too much time with the pit stop for a sprint race, but a good afternoon in the rain.
Hey, definitely. This isn't NASCAR, so we race all day, don't we?
That's exactly right, rain or shine.
All right, congrats, Mark. I know it's not what you wanted, but fantastic spirit and fantastic performance.
Thanks very much.
All right, congratulations, Michael Lewis. You had all kinds of challenges, not only the four-wheel type, but the weather.
Yeah, so this race two, you know, was totally raining compared to race one yesterday in the dry, so you had to adjust your lines, you know, quite massively, and my teammate Ryan Diel and I were going through some lines we wanted to do for this race. Got that nailed down, and when the green flag started, it was, you know, just a big whitewash of just spray everywhere, a little bit of fog on the windshield, and, you know, just had to navigate through that first few corners totally blind.
It really is. You know, you've been on the track a couple of times now, but what's it like to have to deal with that constant water spray on a track that, I will say, you don't know like the back of your hand yet?
Yeah, I mean, we all try to know it as much as possible, and you're trying to anticipate all the corners like you would when you can see, but really it's all reacting because, again, it's totally white in your, you know, windshield, and you're just relying on the red lights ahead of you to kind of see where the corners are and where the curbs are. So it's kind of a little bit of trying to anticipate the corners, but really it's just reacting in the end.
Well, fantastic. You did it all right today and wound up in the right place. Sure appreciate you coming back to Southern Texas and Speed City.
Yeah, thank you, Speed City. And I must thank, you know, Effort Racing and Porsche Motorsport North America, the owner Chuck Toops and Ryan Diel and the whole team for really organizing such a great effort. And the cars were quick and the team really communicated well. In our first AM weekend here, we got double win. So couldn't have asked for more. And was fortunate enough to also mix it up with some pros, you know, around the P10 area. So that's, you know, always humbling to be with them.
That is fantastic. Excellent execution on a terrible weather forecast and great racing from you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And yeah, weather was intense, but it's the same for everyone. So we'll see what happens next time.
All righty. Travel safe.
Thank you.
Okay, Speed City fans, I'm delighted to have caught up with Johnny O'Connell, one of the big stars of this series and obviously racing for Cadillac this year. And, well, kicking off the championship here at Circuit of the Americas. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I tell you, if you had told me, hey, thanks, man. If you had told me that we would finish third in the debut race with this car, literally, this car, I don't even know if it's a month old now. So, I mean, she just began life, but it really speaks to, everybody at Cadillac Racing and the great job they did. You know, I want to say we were maybe a seventh fastest car there, but just like last year, we got an amazing start. I was able to hold off some guys and, bring it home. So, but you know what? Racing science, and it's all about learning, and we're learning about our car, and so, if I get lucky, which I certainly did today, man, today proves I'm Irish, because in a million years we never should have been on the podium, but, it speaks to the caliber of Cadillac Racing, but yeah, I can see, before half season, us maybe being in a position to win a race.
I was going to say, as a racing driver, as you're going down from 11 to 12, you're probably thinking, now, what can I do to get this car where it needs to be? Like you say, you've had a month with it, no more. So what's missing? What have you got to do? Or is it just fine tweaks?
It's fine tweaks. You know, it is, again, running through all the different spring rates, all the different, damper combinations, cambers, casters. There's a great deal of adjustability in the car, but you gotta find out what the car likes. Like Freddie Kamer here. What's up, baby?
Oh, yeah, you got the hardware. Nice.
I know what that's. Because I'm greedy. Yeah. I'll stop over later.
Yeah, you can work a lot.
You won? You won? No way. No way. You won?
Winner.
All right.
We're just pausing while Johnny meets these fellow drivers who are also winning. But, delighted, hey, and it's great to see we've got 22 marks represented here, 22 manufacturers represented here. I think that's what's so exciting about this series, but to see Cadillac, an American car, up there against these Porsches, against these Aston Martins, against Bentleys, all the rest of it, it's great.
You know what? It is, speaks to really what Cadillac is. It is. You know, I mean, you heard me say that, well, racing is science. Well, racing's also marketing. You know, and if you ask people now what Cadillac is, describe a Cadillac, it's certainly not what they would have described 10 or 15 years ago. And the leadership at Cadillac understands the importance to racing, to brand identity, you can be a luxury, car company, but still have performance. BMW, Mercedes, Porsche, Audi, there's a reason that they're in racing and stay in racing. And I'm pretty confident right now that Cadillac's in racing to stay in racing.
Well, great to catch up with you. Congratulations on the podium. Let's hope you go one better tomorrow.
You got it, man. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.